Radio TRO is in search of sponsors. Sponsors get a detailed product mention at the beginning of every episode in our catalog. You can submit your own advertisement, or we can read one for you. Visit email.tro.bike and contact us directly to learn more.
Hey folks, Maggie Dean here, just reaching out to tell you about a couple of great tours we have coming up. One is for the newbies, and the other for the seasoned curve carvers. If you're new to motorcycle touring, check out the LMCT, Lake Michigan Circle Tour, which takes place from Sunday, July 14th to Saturday, July 20th. It's a beginner-friendly, scenic bike tour around Lake Michigan with all the planning and organizing done for you. It's ideal for couples, three-wheel riders, and small groups. It offers a balanced mix of fun curves, beautiful scenery, and rest stops. If you've always wanted to go on a small group motorcycle tour but have yet to do so, this tour is for you. And for all you rabid twisty travelers, check out TRO's Wisco Disco Tour. Based in Wisconsin, this tour is perfect for experienced riders visiting as much of the driftless area as possible over 3 days. Our well-vetted routes are pre-planned, so just take the time off and join us. It's a great opportunity to ride in an intimate setting away from the solo digital world. TRO's Wisco Disco Tour launches Wednesday, August 7th, and concludes Sunday, August 11th. Again, that's two tours approaching. Visit TRO.bike, mouse over events, and select group tours to learn more.
How do we usually open this up? How's it go?
Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Riding Obsession podcast from theridingobsession.com. I'm Robin Dean.
And I'm Travis Burleson. Wait a minute. I'm Robin Dean.
I'm Travis Burleson.
There we go. Everything's better.
That's how the intro goes.
This week's episode is sponsored by the Scrubba. The Scrubba wash bag is a collapsible laundry system that not only works but takes up less space than a single pair of socks. Its interior is made of soft rubber nodes that massage away oil, dirt, and grit. It's a sensibly conceived, durable solution that I'll be taking with me on every trip from here on out. Learn more at thescrubba.com. That's thescrubba.com. It's an Aussie.
You gotta say Aussies. Scrubba.
The Scrubba.
The Scrubba.
By the Aussies. Yes. I used it. We used it all in Tennessee and during camping trips. It works really well. I like it.
Tennessee and the Scrubba in action is Tenna Believe in the Scrubba in action.
Tennessee tune-up. How was your week? It's been a long time, man.
Yeah, it's been more than a week. Yeah, let's say I went to IndyCar races. That was fun. A couple weekends ago up in Elkhart Lake at Road America, America's National Park of Speed or whatever the slogan is. but it was cool. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, they have record numbers. They expanded their camping, expanded their parking. 170,000 tickets sold for the weekend, I think.
170,000 tickets sold. That's crazy.
Yep. So it's that was a good time. Camping, watching cars go around fast. I think next year I'm going to skip IndyCar and go to AMA Superbikes, though.
Yeah, and I know I've asked a couple of times. You had given me prospect dates. I need to look that information up so I have it for sure. Maybe we could document it for the site.
Yeah, I think it's more up to AMA and Road America as to when we have that. I don't think they're published yet.
Nice. What else?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot on the motorcycle front. I got our buddy Kevin's bike up and running pretty well. I think we still need to tweak the you know, he bought it off his buddy because it crashed.
And so his buddy crashed and said, you want to buy this?
Yes. And so the front end, the fork brace on it that sits on the BMW, there's like a built-in fork brace from the factory that bolts on to the bottom part of the fork assembly underneath the fender.
Sure.
And that was tweaked, and it's causing like the forks to be kind of misaligned, I think. Like it feels, okay. It kind of drives a little crooked, like the handlebars are bent, but they're not. So we got to do that at some point here, but otherwise it's running well, and he seems to like it. So
it's a scoliosis machine. That's good. I mean, I know the man's been without a bike for a hot minute.
Yeah.
Glad that he's got one again.
So, yeah, you know, so first thing you want to do when you get a bike is start changing crap on it. So
cool. What else? Anything?
No, all of my bikes are pretty much running right, which is weird.
Not the first for everything.
Yeah. It's like, I don't have like anything to work on.
Heck, your bikes are running, and now my bikes are running well because you redlined the Hawk GT and kicked out all that carbon.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I think it feels great now. So my wife and I, we both took the advanced rider course together, and Ms. Dean, my beloved wife, quite the talent on two wheels, I have to say. I'm really proud of her. She was just talent-wise doing laps around all those cruiser guys, just really kicking the daylights out of it. All the chin over wrist and emergency braking techniques, she got it solid. So we had a lot of fun doing that. And as you know, I finally worked up enough gumption to check my own valves without having a, quote, committee, unquote, you know, people on hand to sort of validate my effort. Had a few hiccups, but, you know, I stayed patient. That's a big deal when you're doing something that complicated. And my Bandit S, which is fared, it takes a little while to prepare due to all the plastics and components that are seemingly hard to access, but I managed to get it done. So I feel like I've graduated, taking a little bit of pride in that one. Also installed that LED H4 bulb you recommended on our Hawk GT, and I'm impressed with it. It's bright enough to give me a tan.
Yeah, no, it's the one I linked you to, the kind of overstock one off of Amazon.
The very same. Now, when you installed that, did you use the spring?
Yeah, it comes with like a little adapter plate so it can fit different sort of fitments, right? And then you just put on the correct adapter plate and then you just clip it in like you do your normal bulb.
You can do that, but there's also a spring in case there's any kind of a loose fit. So like I don't have any, there aren't any little pockets where you twist the bulb into place. It just rests there. So you use the spring over top of that and it compresses it in place.
Oh, see, the way it, the spring is built into the headlight assembly. So there's like a little spring sort of latch that clips the bulb in.
Nice.
That was part of the way it holds the regular one in.
So what about riding this year? You know, like my wife and I, we did a lot so far. We've been across Tennessee via Memphis, Nashville, Chattanooga, and Knoxville. And we'll be writing about that soon for the site. I'm looking forward to that. We're considering maybe getting some land down south so that we don't have to worry about these Chicago winters, these soul-sucking winter. I can't even say the word.
No, not too much. I finally took out the DRZ, like out into the driftless. Which is weird at first because I'm not as comfortable on that bike. And as soon as I figured out how to corner the dirt bike in a dirt bike style and not in a sport bike style, like you can't really lean like, you know, chin over wrist style. You got to throw the bike down underneath you.
Yeah, you got to shovel it.
Yeah. And but then it's great because too, like lines you wouldn't dare do on a sport bike. Like, oh, clip the apex of that where the road's just crumbling into the shoulder and it's like just chunks of asphalt, one piece of asphalt. Yeah, yeah. The DRZ, just go through it and it's fine. It just hooks that and berms into it and you pop out the other side of the corner. It's awesome.
I'm glad I got the pleasure of riding that bike. That's a fun bike, man. I feel so tall and I feel like a big person. We also I went to Brown County, Indiana, managed to document that route as well. I've been there twice now. I forgot this year. I just wrote the article about how good those roads are. They are amazing. And if you know a local there, all the better. Riding through Brown County, Indiana, or any of the local towns outside of it with somebody who knows those roads or frequents them regularly is just icing on the cake, man. Amazing.
Yep. I did get to ride the Brown Cow.
The Brown Cow. What is that?
Sapporo's 1986 Honda Goldwing Aspencade.
Yeah.
It's a Goldwing.
In Sapporo's words, you were surprised at how weightless it became once it began moving.
Yeah, I was doing like 45, 50 down like the highway. And it's like if you go just like direct handlebar inputs and not kind of think about leaning your weight. Like it's almost twitchy. Like it's weird.
So if you steer the bike, it actually is responsive.
Yeah, no, and everything on it's real light. Like all your inputs are very soft. But maybe that's just the age of the bike. I don't know.
Nice. Are there any controls that you use with your feet that actually operate things like lights? Is it that left foot light bright option?
Though you do have to use both brakes all the time. If you want,
sure.
If you want all of the front brake, you have to use your foot.
Okay. Oh, so it actually combines. It's got linked braking.
It's got this weird, linked braking where if you just use your right hand, you're not going to get all of the front brake.
Interesting. I didn't know that. That's cool. I mean, that's not necessarily the worst system in the world. I always use all brakes all the time anyhow.
Yeah. But, and it's, I always had a hard time getting my foot kept getting caught on the engine guard and the head because, the engine sticks out the side of it.
Yeah.
But no, it was fun. Yeah. It was a good time. And I let John and I swapped and he rode the big one through some twisty roads.
What did he think of that?
He was all smiles.
You know, he just rode with us through from, let's see, it was New Glarus to Soldier's Grove. and seemed to have a good time there. I haven't really written much about it. Well, you and I got to do that route. It's amazing.
I know he was kind of maybe taking it easy, but I had no...
Oh, yeah.
He was on the much faster bike when he was on the big one. I had no problem keeping up with him on the Goldwing.
Well, we're going to take this opportunity real quick and discuss some updated site features and developments. An update to the WordPress architecture temporarily broke our page-by-page site navigation scheme, as well as the pre-filtered motorcycle sale listing that's been fixed. Because we're looking to lead affordable motorcycle tours, I plan on building a right side widget with information regarding whatever tour is coming up next in the calendar, complete with a sign up now button. So look for that if you live local to the Midwest. And let's see if we can't get a group of us together and help the site make some money and save up some scratch and make things better. And now on to off the bike topics, wrenching, reading, leisure, the like. Margaret and I had our first free weekend this past week. We went on a Daredevil bender, the TV show on Netflix. It's a great show. Mindless fun, that type of thing. What about you? What's new outside of riding or wrenching?
The IndyCar races, which is really part of that weekend was also the Pirelli World Championship Series, which is touring cars.
Oh, nice.
And the lowest class of that, the touring car class, is like really the most fun to watch. Because like the lowest, because in that you have like TC, TCA, and TCB. And TCB is like Honda Fits and Honda Civics and Chevy Sonics and Mazda 2s. And it's just like really cool to watch them like rip around this racetrack, these little front wheel drive cars.
Now, are they heavily modified or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, they're set up to be race cars. So, the interiors are gutted and they got a roll cage and they got them, they don't have any side windows or anything.
So, is there a rule that the car can be, like, weight can be removed, but not too many modifications can be put into them? Or how's that work?
Yeah, I mean, there's pages and pages of regulations, for that sort of stuff, as is most racing.
Only Kellogg's cereal.
Yeah. But it was cool. It was neat because the other... there were, and in like the upper part of that group, so you have like the three classes all race in one group.
Nice.
Like the faster cars were usually MX-5s, Mazda Miatas, like MX-5s.
Sure.
Which are rear-wheel drive. And then the big V6 Honda Accord coupes, which are
front-wheel. Okay, and where does that put the Ford Focus?
So the MX-5s were like the TC, like the top for that group, along with like some of the modified Accords. There might have been a Focus or two in the TCA group, and then TCB was like the really small stuff. So it was like Ford Fiestas, Chevy Sonics and Mazda 2s. But it was really neat to watch. If you're familiar with the racetrack, I was sitting on the outside entrance of turn 8, which is like a right angle left hander right before it goes into the carousel. And the front wheel drive cars, like the Accord, take a way different line than the rear wheel drive cars do.
Yeah, understeer, right?
And every now and again, you'd see a Honda Accord follow Mazda MX-5 into the corner, like get target focused and follow the MX-5's line and not take the front wheel drive, and then they'd push right through the corner and go way wide.
Yeah,
because like the front wheel drive cars would have to come in on the outside, start turning, kind of wait, start turning into the corner, and then the car would catch and go around the corner.
Right, and there are no all wheel drive cars in that class, right?
No, there was one Lotus, but I think that was rear wheel drive. I saw him go off in 8. That was pretty fun.
Nice. I noticed you were also reading Zen and the Art of. We don't have to go there again. You at least got through it,
I still haven't finished it. I took a big... I got maybe 80 pages left.
Yeah.
They're like in California, and he's just about summed up whatever he's trying to say. I don't...
Hey, good things only, man. Like, we're reading a really good book called Pirate Hunters. It's actually interesting. It's about shipwreck addicts. These guys literally seek out treasure.
It's nonfiction.
It's nonfiction. Okay. It's nonfiction. It's this guy literally seeks out treasure in open seas. And the drama, you can't make that up.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
So bad. Just crazy. But yeah, much more interesting if you're not into something such as an excellent book like Zen and the Art of.
That's 90% heavy philosophy of why.
Why?
I used to think this, but then I think this. And here's 5 pages on why I went from this to this.
You got to say it like it's a question though, all the time. And that's why I went from this to this?
To this? And then I wrote 5 pages?
Did you though? Did you? Why?
And in the process, I learned that it's not like this.
All right, on to site-inspired topics from written articles and a mid-show sponsorship message. Again, this episode of the Riding Obsession podcast is brought to you by the Scrubba Wash Bag. It's a collapsible laundry system that not only works, but takes up less space than a single pair of socks. Its interior is made up of a soft rubber node that massages away oil, dirt, and grit. It's a sensibly conceived, durable solution that I'll be taking with me on every trip from here on out. Learn more at thescrubba.com. Aussies.
Oi.
So, listener questions. I've got a couple here for the first time, and they're kind of dated. They're from some time ago. One is from Ryan Chappelle, who asked me, having ridden both, how would I compare the SV650 to the Bandit 1200? Yeah, it's a different bike, different motor.
That's like lemons. I mean, maybe compared to a Bandit 600.
Maybe. But at the same time, if I abandon certain things about the behavior of the bike and the posture, it's like being a twin and half the displacement. The SV650 is growlier in general. It's got bigger expression of torque at the lower speeds.
Yeah.
That isn't to say it has more torque.
150 pounds lighter.
It's 150 pounds lighter. And, you know, the Bandit, it outruns and out-torques it on all fronts. But the feel of the SV650 is kind of its own thing. The profile being smaller feels more nimble than the Bandit within those torque boundaries. That's the most comparable difference. The length of your SUV as opposed to a Bandit is more stout, so it's more responsive and twitchier in the turns. Bandit, however, it's every bit as capable in the same turns at speed, but the difference is you have to like throw your body around more intensely to pull it off.
I was gonna say,
this comparison, in my view, it can't be expressed without consideration for the fact that I've converted my Bandit to sport touring. So, in its default profile, the Bandit's significantly more angry. It's a sport bike, albeit with standard position superbike bars.
Yeah, well, the as far as bikes you've ridden and own, the direct comparison for an SV650 is your Hawk GT,
yes.
NT650,
yes. Which
is
I believe
a
to 60cc be
V twin also.
Yeah, man, I love that bike. I mean, the Bandit can do anything the SV can, but in some instances, it takes more of ride or work to do so than the SV. It's more of a local commuter. Gearing is intended for such. And the Bandit is overkill for anything urban. The rider rarely, if ever, gets beyond second gear. The Bandit is, however, worth riding from the burbs into the loop, no question.
Yeah, well, I think, too, if the Bandit 600, whatever, the GSX 600, is that what it was called?
Yeah, I think they're doing 650 now.
Because
the GSX is 1,000.
Yeah, but the 6, that's also fully fared now. Like, it kind of looks like a Gixxer at a glance.
And I love that. I love that. As long as they would make, dear Suzuki, make your stuff easy to take apart.
Yeah. Well, the SV is back now, and it's more original cladding of Spartan.
So it's not the Gladius or whatever?
Yeah, they got rid of a lot of the plastic and the swoopy swoops and just made it more like it used to be.
90s jelly?
Yeah, so it's 90s jelly circa 2009 or whatever.
All right, well, I'm going to pass these next questions plural to you, so I'm going to send them. Let me get through the questions first, then combine your take on it, because I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say on it. A good friend of mine, Don Buren, is regularly having to adjust his chain. He thinks he might need a new one for his 1980 some odd night, maybe it's a 90 something Nighthawk 750. And so he was asking me about, what chains do I like, and I personally like to get the latest in reputable new technology, something that people have said, like, this is the way we should go now. So for like the Bandit, I've got an X-ring chain. I've got the X-ring chain on the Bandit, which I got to tell you, I'm quite happy with. But ever since I even got the Hawk GT, I never changed the chain on it. That's an O-ring chain. And then the second question he had about it was to work with a master link or with the riveted permanent, the chain breaking tool rivet thing. Which I've got both of those too. I am completely indifferent to that. I have no preference over MasterLink versus Riveted. So, floor is yours. What do you want to say to Don?
He has a late 80s, early 90s Nighthawk 750, the one that looks like the 250 with like the kind of swoopy 90s swoop.
Yeah, put into a big machine.
Yeah, yeah, the 750, yeah, with it has that the CB dual overhead cam inline for
yes.
Standard Honda air-cooled, oil-cooled, I think. For that bike, you definitely want to go O-ring, or you can do an X-ring. I mean, the DID X-ring chain is kind of a premium product, and it commands a premium price, so that's something to think about. There's a reason you get what you pay for, I think, on that. Because basically what it is, so when you talk about chain construction and how chains wear, what actually wears on a chain is the holes and the pins. So when you talk about chain stretch, Right? Like you have to like as you ride your bike, like your chain, I'm doing air quotes, stretches. And so you have to pull the wheel back a little bit to
adjustment
compensate.
Few thousand.
You're not stretching the link, the sides of the links. Like that piece of metal is not getting pulled apart. Like the tensile strength on those is huge. Like your bike's just not that powerful. But what you are doing is where the pins join the links together and the holes where the pins get in get ovated. So because every time that chain bends to go around the sprocket, it's wearing the hole that it sits in, and it's wearing the pin.
And if anybody doesn't catch that by ovated, we're talking about the circular form where the pins go in that becomes ovular in shape.
Yeah.
Like an egg.
So the hole, the pin wears down and gets smaller, and the hole wears out and gets bigger. And so you actually get that looseness in the chain. Like if you take a brand new chain, like a length of brand new chain, and you lay it on a flat surface, and you sort of squish and pull the chain along its length, it won't move. If you take a worn-out chain and squish and pull around its length, it will. It'll compress and move because the pins are moving inside the links.
Very good. So in the end, what's the difference in wear for the X-ring versus the O-ring?
An O-ring, let's talk like O-ring or versus non-O-ring. So like a non-O-ring chain, which are super cheap, they don't have, they're just metal. So they're just a basic chain. So you have to keep greasing them to keep grease into where those pins go and minimize the wear of the pin and the hole the pin sits in. An O-ring chain has an O-ring around where the pin enters into the link. And what that does is it keeps grease inside that assembly. So like where it wears, where the pin is moving in the link, the O-ring traps the grease in there and keeps it lubricated. So it wears better. And then the X-ring is just what it sounds like. Like instead of being if you took the ring off, like if you popped the rivet and you took the ring off, instead of having and you cut the ring in half, instead of being round like an O-ring, it would look like an X in cross section. And the benefits of that is like you have 2 points on each connection of rubber instead of just the one of the, you know, if a circle surround on two sides only touches on two sides or 2 points. The X ring touches on 4 points because it's X shaped. So it just does a better job of keeping dirt out of the pin and keeping grease in the pin.
Good to know. Now I understand. So basically the compression against those 4 points is creating a better seal. It's stopping it from moving any further to allow anything out, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, anything like that. It's keeping dirt out and keeping grease in is what it's doing. So it's that's the benefit. But they're a little bit harder to manufacture, and so they cost more.
Very good, very good. Now, if anybody out there has any questions for us, we are interested in answering them. What we do is we end up researching the information before we respond, if we don't know it already, that is. Email your questions and concerns to podcast@theridingobsession.com. That's podcast@theridingobsession.com, or call 773-614-6422.
6422.
Yes. 773-614-6422.
Riding Obsession, call today. Boom.
All right, so now we're on to route planning. This should get, you know, pretty interesting here. I don't know how we might want to go about this, but we got the Ozarks trip coming up. Before the Ozarks rally in the Missouri Ozarks, before it even starts, you and I have 3 days to get there. And after it's done, we have 3 days to get home. I'm trying to figure out something to do. We got to find some kind of an excellent route.
I think I saw an article on the internet the other day that was like the top 25 donut shops in the United States. We should see how many of those we can link together.
I like it. You know, we're talking about how we're going to get into shape, meaning any shape possible, then we'll just get into that shape.
Pear is a shape.
Pear is a shape, and you know, multiple waists, that's a shape. So
lumpy and roly-poly a shape, I don't know.
If we're not shaped like donuts by the time we get back, we haven't done it right. So I'll tell you what, how about next week we do a special unlimited time frame podcast where we sit down and the entire podcast is us planning our route down to the Missouri Ozarks. And if anybody wants to help us out with this, Travis is coming from the Madison, Wisconsin area. I'm in Chicago. I don't mind going north first, but we need to get to the Missouri Ozarks, more specifically Farmington, Missouri, in 3 days' time with as much pleasurable riding as possible. Where do you want us to go? You tell us. What advice do you have?
So, fun side note here. I just Google mapped Farmington, Missouri, right? And the the street view picture that comes up for Farmington, Missouri on Google Maps is a building called Pro Rehab.
Yeah, the professional rehabilitation for something.
I think it's sports therapy as I'm looking closer, but you know. So due south of St. Louis. So, I mean, I was thinking we do, I don't know how good the road is. Can you go through a lot of little towns, as far as right, at least down or back? I feel like I really want to just do the river road to have done it. You know, it's more of a cruiser route than a sport bike route. Like the roads will probably be good in parts, but not necessarily the whole way.
Yeah, I get it. Maybe we can improvise some detours that reconnect with it on occasion just to keep things good. But who knows what's
out there.
I want
to ride my motorcycle into the Mississippi River.
I will say that there's one section of that road that County Q, which is pretty fast, if I remember right. That should be
I'm sure outside of the Quad Cities and St. Louis and maybe Dubuque, there's not really probably a whole lot along the way.
We have to invent, which means when we do this podcast, if we decide to go that route and do a special one, then I'm going to do my own thing. You do your own thing. And then we'll compare what we come up with while we're chatting.
Yes.
I like that plan.
Darn tootin'. And that's a good way to do route planning with your buddy. Pro tip.
I like it. So that's going to bring us to this week's new product review. I'm going to hand this one off to Travis because I didn't really look anything up. But I'd like to know, what have you seen on the open market in the world of motorcycling that has caught your eye?
It's midsummer, so a lot of the new products aren't really coming out. I feel like a lot of that comes out for the bike shows in the over the winter, like late fall through spring.
Sure.
I did just pick up a set of cheap eBay highway pegs to put on the big one that don't really fit over my already used engine crash bars.
We'll just use one. Use the left one.
The left one, because the right side has. I mean, I got them on French Craigslist, so, you know, they're a little not straight and not round anymore. So I'm messing with that. I don't know. There's not a whole lot I've seen that has caught my eye as far. I mean, there's been some cool bikes that have come out.
Sure. What's your favorite so far? I mean, that's new. That counts.
The new Triumphs.
The new Thruxtons?
Well, the Thruxton R.
Yeah.
Which you can get the non-R version. The new Thruxton R and then the Street Twin. But that new 1200 motor just seems like it's a blast. And then the Street Twin just seems cool. It's more powerful than the old standard motor, the 900cc motor. So 900 and change cc motor, since it's liquid.
Do you know offhand what they changed?
Everything.
Nice.
It's a completely different motor. It's liquid cooled, different fuel injection. I don't know if the Twin, I think the Street Twin still has the 270 crank. I know the Thruxton R has a 270 degree crank, so it's got that. So the crank sets the connecting pins at 90 degrees apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of a vertical twin, the pistons can be opposite each other, mm-hmm. which is a little more balancing. So when one's at the bottom of the stroke, the other's at the top of the stroke, or they can move together. Like when they're both at the top of the stroke, and then they're both at the bottom of the stroke. Like one's at compression while the other's at top exhaust, you know?
Yep.
Or with a 270 degree crank, one's always 270 degrees behind the other one. So they're mm-hmm. never at the top or the bottom together. So you get this offset firing pattern like a V-twin.
Okay, so a little bit of a diagonal takeoff, diagonal launch.
Yeah, so it fires every 270 degrees. It goes pop, 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 pop.
Okay, so it's got a gallop.
Yeah, and that what you get is more torque. That's what you
that's
get.
That's cool. Well, in the low end or all around? Is it linear?
They tune it to be pretty linear from what I've read and seen on some dyno charts.
Man, that's cool.
So it's... because that's with a single or a V-twin, when you get that power rest, power rest, power rest, that's how you get that real good torque band. Whereas on the balanced, inline fours, you really have to rev them up.
Here's a product for you then. I think I saw a kid riding one of those through Evanston, Rich Hipster in Evanston area. But here's a new product for you. How about the Hydrographics? Get Paisley rims?
Oh, yeah, was it holograms? They etch it on a film on water and then press the part into it.
Yeah, and then laser. Lift it out. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I don't know. That's I'm not sure I would ever do that, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think, and then I keep seeing some more stuff for the Scully, the VR heads up display helmet, but I've kind of heard mixed things about it.
Yeah, that much tech You know, if there's anything I've discovered by adding new electronics to anything on my bike, it's that eventually that's just another thing that could fail if you haven't done it right. Fortunately, I guess I'm pretty good with that stuff, but having another gizmo that eventually is going to burn out, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, and for $1,500.
Yeah, it better come with one of those Ducati models.
Yeah, and just be the most comfortable, quiet, amazing helmet on the face of the planet, which I don't think it is.
Right. You know, it's it can't fit every head. And on that note, are we good for closing remarks?
Sure.
All right. And our final sponsorship message, I want to say that this episode of the Riding Ascension podcast is brought to you by the Scrubba Wash Bag.
Scrubba.
The Scrubba. It's a collapsible laundry system that not only works, but takes up less space than a single pair of socks. Its interior is made up of soft rubber nodes that massage away oil, dirt, and grit. It's a sensibly conceived, durable solution that I'll be taking with me on every long trip from here on out. Like I said, I'm not joking. We use that thing every day, and it is excellent, awesome. You just basically squirt a little bit of camp suds in there with some water, roll around on your clothes, and then rinse it, and then hang everything up, and it's done. I did an article about it. Check it out on the site. You can learn more about that product at thescrubba.com. That's thescrubba.com. Email your questions and concerns to podcast@theridingobsession.com or call 773-614-6422. For The Riding Obsession, I'm Robin Dean.
And I'm Travis Burleson.
Or I might be Travis Burleson.
And I could be Robin Dean.
You never know. But either way, safe travels, everyone.